Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out this evening. I'm Rachel Sanders. I'm the Executive Director for the Alliance for Better Utah, and I will be opening the debate. But this debate tonight is brought to you by our affiliated organization, the ABU Education Fund, which is a nonpartisan 501c3 organization dedicated to civic engagement and good governance. As in the past, we see the political season as an opportunity to work toward increasing civic engagement, and we are doing so through a series of forums and debates. Our forum series is called the LDS Values Forum, and those are designed to bring together both Democrats and Republicans of the LDS faith to have an open and frank discussion about how their religious beliefs and interpretation of their church's doctrines influence their political choices and affiliation. It is a vibrant discussion and one that is typically avoided in polite company. So our next one that we're hosting is at the U of U on November 3rd, and we really hope to see many of you there. In contrast to the debate commission's focus on congressional and statewide offices, our debate series is designed to engage the public in their local elections, to provide local candidates with an opportunity that they often don't get, and to give voters a chance to interact with those politicians who, quite frankly, have the most influence over their daily lives. This year, we are sponsoring three legislative debates in addition to a school board debate. The school board debate was Tuesday. Lisa Cummins and Aaron Preston. Last night we had District 49, Zach Robinson and Robert Spinlove. And tonight, we have Karen Kwan and McKay Jensen. As in the past, we are pleased to partner with the John R. Park Debate Society. The John R. Park Debate Society was founded in 1869, has hosted more than 30 campaign debates and issue forums over the last decade, featuring community organizations ranging from Utah Minutemen to the American Civil Liberties Union, and political figures ranging from Governor Herbert to former Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson. It has been recognized as 2016 University of Utah's Beacon of Excellence and ranked in the top 10 nationally and first in the Pac-12, which I'm a little biased, it's really the Pac-10, sorry guys, of the National Parliamentary Debate Association. Our moderator this evening is new to this. It's been Michael's last 2 times, so I have to pull up her short bio. I apologize. This is Dakota Park Ozy. She studies political communication in the Department of Communications at the University of Utah. In addition, Dakota teaches in the Department of Communications and is a member of the John R. Park Debate Society coaching staff. I'd like to welcome all of you tonight, and thanks to our candidates again. And our thanks to our debate, to the Debate Society for partnering with us, and thank you to our broadcaster, the public radio station KCPW, who will be recording tonight's debate and broadcasting our series next week. I also want to add a second sincere thanks to all of you for coming out to this evening. We know that it's tough to get up after work, get your kids fed, and get here in the evening. It is one thing to watch Hillary and Trump beat each other up on national television, but this is democracy in action, and these are the things that affect your daily lives. There is simply no way that anyone who saw the debate last night or the one on Tuesday could not walk away with a sense of what the candidates believed and who they wanted to support. Our goal is to give the opportunity to as many candidates and voters as we can. That it was what creates an engaged citizenry. We welcome you to come, and we welcome you to stay after the debates for a meet and greet the candidates, and we encourage you to join the ABU Education Fund's email list, which you can do so by signing. Do we have that in the back? Okay. And or you can go to abuedfund.org, or you can go to betterutah.org and sign and add your email to our list there. With that, I'd like to turn things over to Dakota.
Good evening. My name is Dakota Park Ozy, and I'm an assistant coach with the John R. Park Debate Society at the University of Utah. I will be your moderator for tonight's debate and look forward to facilitating a conversation between the two candidates with us tonight, who are running for a seat in the Utah House of Representatives, representing District 34. First, I would like to take an opportunity to introduce the format of tonight's debate. But before I do, please join me in thanking Rachel Sanders and Josh Cantor of the ABU Education Fund, an affiliate organization of the Alliance for a Better Utah, aimed at improving voter education and encouraging voter participation, for organizing this evening's debate. Tonight's debate will be organized in 4 parts. The candidates will each have 3 minutes to introduce themselves, Following that, we will engage in a moderated discussion, during which time each candidate will have an opportunity to answer each question. Their answers will be limited to 1 minute and 30 seconds each. The issues the candidates will discuss during this portion of the debate were drawn from issues suggested by each candidate, but members of the U's John R. Park Debate Society wrote the final questions, and neither candidate has had the opportunity to preview these questions. During the portion of the discussion, I reserve the right to ask follow-up questions of either candidate, and they will have 1 minute to respond to these. After the moderated discussion, I will ask members of the audience if they have any questions for the candidates. At that time, I ask that you wait until after you are recognized, and that you keep your questions brief, and that you frame your question in such a way that each candidate may speak to the issue you raise. I will be providing examples of these during the discussion moderated. Finally, each candidate will have 3 minutes to offer closing remarks. The order of introductions, questions, and closing statements has been predetermined by a coin flip, and there will be a timekeeper sitting in the front row. Before the debate begins, please join me in turning off your cell phones, pagers, tablets, or any other device that might interfere with tonight's conversation or recording. Additionally, I would like to ask that during each portion of the debate, you refrain from interrupting, except for right now, when I hope you will join me in welcoming the two candidates running to represent House District 34, Democrat Karen Kwan and Republican McKay Jensen. So the winner of the coin flip being Dr. Kwan, she will give her introduction first and will have 3 minutes to do so.
Thank you. And thank you to ABU for hosting this. This is a great opportunity to be able to meet residents and to talk about our policies and our beliefs. Gosh, I'm nervous. I shouldn't be nervous, right? We're all friends here, right? Well, I'm Karen Kwan. I'm a proud mother of three daughters. Two of them are here and two sons-in-law. All of them are educated in the public school system here. My two older daughters have a bachelor's degree, one from the U of U and the other from Weber State University, so here in Utah. And I have a 10-year-old sitting over there who's in the Chinese Dual Immersion Program here in Taylorsville. My partner, my fiancé, who's also here, is he's a public school teacher. He teaches at Evergreen Junior High here, and I thank them for their support, and thank you for coming. And I'd like to thank you all for coming as well. So I am a longtime resident of Taylorsville, and even as a child, I came to visit my cousin here, who owned the restaurant, the Kowloon. It's still there. Some of you may remember the Kowloon. And I used to come here when Salt Lake Community College was still called Trade Tech, and I played in the parking lot and learned how to ride a mini bike on the campus there. I have 25 plus years experience working in community advocacy here. And one of the very first things that I did here in politics was a little over 20 years ago, I worked with people like Bruce Wasden to lobby in order to incorporate Taylorsville City. Since then, I've volunteered at various community advocacy organizations throughout my career. As a professional, I'm an associate professor at Salt Lake Community College. I earned both my undergraduate and my master's degree in psychology at Pepperdine University, and that's what I teach. But my doctorate is in educational leadership and policy. I'm running because I believe that as voters, we should know who our representatives are, and we should know what's going on in the legislature. I don't think we've had that transparency, and I don't think we've had that voice in these past years. I believe that Utah's competitive future depends on the upcoming generation's education. And as such, I'm committed to improving public school education. I'm also committed to improving air quality and protecting the quality of life for our working families and our senior citizens. I'm proud and honored to be endorsed by the Utah Education Association, UEA, also GEA, Green Vote Utah, Equality Utah, Women's Democratic Club, Utah Public Employees Association, and many others. Thank you very much.
Mr. Jensen?
Thank you. My name is McKay Jensen, and I am running to be your representative. First, I would like to thank all of you who are here tonight. This is a big step in helping discuss the ideas that are important to us. That's the important part of politics, is when people come to together to collaborate, to discuss and find workable solutions. A little bit about me, who I am, and why I'm committed to District 34. Personally, I'm an implant to this area, but my wife is a lifetime resident. This is where she was born, where she's raised, and after I married her and we graduated school at Utah State University, we decided to make this our home as well. And so this area is now my home. I also value Salt Lake Community College. My father graduated from SLCC back when it was the trade tech school. So I am committed to this area. I chose to make this place my home. Tonight I want to tell you four things that I think you should know about me, because I think they'll tell you why I'm the best person to represent you. First, I'm a structural engineer by profession. My job is to find solutions and deliver results. I think that's what everybody wants on the Capitol. Not simply to discuss talking points, but to actually find workable results. Number two, I'm a farmer and a patriot by heritage. Growing up on a farm in eastern Utah, I learned not only the value of hard work, but I learned the true reward of working hard, of putting in a hard day's labor, of responsibility and of accountability. Not only was I taught to work hard, though, I also, as a patriot, have the correct vision. As a patriot, I truly understand the principles that have made this country great, that has given us freedoms and liberties that people in other areas don't enjoy today. Because I understand the past, I can preserve the future. Number three, I am a dedicated family man by choice. My wife, Sandria, and I are working hard to raise and nurture our four children to be productive, honorable citizens of society, because I understand the vital role that strong, stable families play in our societies and our neighborhoods to make them strong and secure. Number four, I am a creator and builder by passion. I love to create, build, and improve systems all around me, in whatever capacity I may. My number one priority is to create and build a legacy of honest, effective, and transparent government. Thank you.
Thank you both. Now, as I previewed earlier, we will move to our first question, which will be about sustainability and air quality. This year, an article published by the Salt Lake Tribune headlined, "Utah's bad air is the worst it's been in years, and it's likely to stay around," covered the dramatic increase in PM2.5 particles. The acceptable level for PM2.5 is 35 micrograms per cubic meter, according to the Environmental Protection Agency's health-based air standards. This last winter, we experienced levels from the 50 to 120 micrograms per cubic centimeter. If elected, what would you do to improve Utah's air quality? Mr. Jensen.
I consider myself a pragmatic conservative. I hold strongly to conservative values, but as a pragmatic, I'm working for realistic solutions. I truly understand the situation of our air and the pollution we have in this valley. My wife, she has asthma, and it affects her. So I can see bad air days simply by observing my wife. I understand it truly is a problem for us, and we need to do things about that to clean it up. But this is not just a talking point for me. Again, as an engineer, I want to bring solid solutions. Things that we can do are, first, we need to educate. That is the number one thing we can do to make a real change. The young generation, we see it in them today, not because they're fined and punished, but because they're educated. They make huge strides in conscientiously conserving water. They recycle more than any other generation. Again, it's not because they were forced to, it's because they were educated of the benefits. I will work to use the government to educate people on what we can do. Other things, deal with our transportation system. If we have a smooth transportation system, we can decrease the pollution caused by cars. and I am working hard to make our transportation system good for our air quality. Thank you.
Dr. Kwan.
Thank you. We do indeed have terrible air, the sixth worst in the nation, and some days it is the worst in the nation. This is an impact this impacts a great deal of us, and especially our young babies and our older citizens. Utah has a broad range of energy solutions, from wind to solar, to coal, to natural gas, to oil. We have more than any other state. We can put together a sustainable energy plan that can lead the nation in this issue. But it's a matter of priorities. We need to put our priorities to work here. When we talk about sustainability, we need to continue to incentivize and prioritize and subsidize sustainable clean energy. We need to attract businesses that are going to continue the work on sustainable buildings, structures. And we need to do this while we're mitigating the impact on our coal industry. I mean, think about Facebook. Right? $300 million was going to go to Facebook and tax incentives. First of all, who knew we had $300 million, right? Think about what that can do for the coal industry in terms of training and in terms of career placement and advising. So it's a matter of priorities. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, I believe you both brought up transportation or infrastructure in some capacity, so we will move to that subject matter next. According to Deseret News of June 16th, Utah's motor fuel tax was set at 24.5 cents per gallon in 1997. It was not adjusted again, even for inflation, until last year. However, in that time, transportation costs outstripped revenue, causing a projected $11.3 billion gap in transportation funding over the next 25 years. While a bill was passed to allow gas tax to adjust as the price of fuel changes, Diane Meppin of the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute says that it will not be enough to bridge the gap alone. What do you believe would be the best course of action to overcome this transportation deficit? Dr. Kwan.
Yeah, transportation, again, is indeed a big problem and an issue, especially for the West Side. You know that we have a transportation plan that goes to 2040, and that includes issues of public transportation as well as tracks. And the reason that we don't have good public transportation here on the West Side is that it hasn't been funded in the way that it should be. We have residents right here that rely on bus service and rely on tracks, but it's not as convenient, it's not as efficient as it should be for us West Siders. There needs to be a coalition of local government, business, and federal entities to improve both transportation and infrastructure needs. Salt Lake Valley has areas, talking about infrastructure, we have areas of old canals, sewers, things that we need to address now before it's a problem. Because in the year 2060, it's estimated that our population will grow by nearly 77%. And they're all going to want a glass of water, and they're all going to want to flush the toilet, and they're all going to want to take a shower. It's time for us now to engage in that conversation. But neither Mia Love nor Chris Stewart has engaged in that conversation. So we need a stronger coalition. We need stronger voices on the local level to attract those federal dollars that we need. That's going to be me.
I like to say that in the year 2040, our population here on the West Side will double. That is something that we need to seriously address, not just from a transportation point of view, but from infrastructure, from water delivery systems, from housing, from utilities. As a civil structural engineer, I understand that wholly. That is my life. I am the candidate who can provide the expertise in delivering those systems. Now, the question specifically is, how can we help bridge the gap in funding, particularly when we consider that we are expected to double our population? I certainly don't like to raise taxes. My goal is to bring them down to the minimum level that will bring us sustainability. I realize also the transportation system. A good transportation system is the number one thing that our government can do to deliver our economy. So we need to find ways to bring in more funding for education. Part of that will be use taxes. Nobody likes them, I understand that. But if we benefit from a government-provided system, we need to pay for that government-provided system. And so we can do that through vehicle registration fees. We can do that through gas fees. But we need to address this. And those are two ways that we can do that.
Thank you. Moving along, our next topic will be mental health and the criminal justice system. Fox 13 of September 28th explains that on September 27th of this year, a U.S. District Court judge allowed the Disability Law Center to file a class action lawsuit against the state for keeping mentally ill people in county jails because Utah state hospital facilities are full. As of June, there are at least 39 people on a waiting list to begin treatment at the hospital. All of them were arrested, found incompetent to stand on trial, and ordered to treatment at the hospital. Some are kept in solitary confinement, and none have been convicted of a crime. What steps would you recommend to ensure the mentally ill that pass through our criminal justice system have access to the appropriate resources? Mr. Jensen.
This is truly a sad situation. When people are being held, regardless of their mental stability, when people are being held without due cause simply because we don't have the capacity in our justice and correction system, that's not right. I will be working to fix that. There are specific things, again, that we can do to help those who have issues with incompetency, are judged incompetent to stand trial. The first and most important thing is that we need to truly value life. And when we simply incarcerate somebody and throw away the key, so to speak, do we really value life? If that's our approach, I don't think so. We need to make help available. The purpose of our justice system is rehabilitation, not incarceration. Only through rehabilitation does our society actually benefit. I will work and support the bills and laws that are being written currently. Representative Hutchings is one who is currently working bills to allow more opportunity for mentally ill patients to gain not just access to rehabilitation, but to avoid incarceration in our penitentiaries and prisons and jails. I will strongly stand by Representative Hutchings and others to make sure that that becomes a reality.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Dr. Kwan?
I think the issue here is that incompetent to stand trial. So I think we need to take a step back here to determine whether or not they need to stand trial and whether or not we are criminalizing mental illness. Now, it's estimated that about 6 to 10 times as many people who are incarcerated suffer from mental illness than the general population. And many of these have substance abuse addictions. Incarcerating people with mental illness it's expensive and it's ineffective. I was in a room with Sim Gill when he told this story, Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill, when he told this heartbreaking story of this mother who called him and said, "What minimum crime does my son have to do so that he could get picked up and get the mental health prescriptions that he needs, the prescriptions for his mental health issues?" She said, "I can't afford them anymore." He said it was the most heartbreaking phone call he had ever gotten. I know that if we looked at this issue, I know that there are many families that could have been saved. I know that there are relationships that could have been saved. And I know that there are many children that could be spared. I applaud the efforts of Operation Diversion, where Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, the district attorney, and treatment centers all got together to assess and differentiate between those that need to be hospitalized, those that go to treatment, and those that need to be processed in the criminal justice system.
Thank you both. Now, along the way, you've both mentioned education or caring for families and children in various ways, so I would like to talk about education briefly. According to the Deseret News on September 28, 2016, a new report from Envision Utah finds that Utah's teacher shortage is the number one education-related concern for residents, with almost 80% of respondents expressing concern that schools are unable to find enough teachers for their students. Furthermore, the Utah State Office of Education reports that 42% of new teachers quit within 5 years. How would you reverse this trend and encourage teachers to stay in our public education system? Dr. Kwan.
Well, more pay is a minimum required standard. That is a minimum because it's not the only issue. The legislature has allowed public school education and its teachers to be slighted for years and years. We need to address this disrespect that occurs yearly. We have great teachers, and these teachers are being asked to do more and more with less and less. We don't pay teachers enough already. We know this. And yet teachers are being asked to fundraise for school supplies, for playground equipment, for and then they end up paying for supplies out of their own pockets. I know we just did that today. We can't allow this to continue. At the same time, I keep hearing people call our public school teachers babysitters. And that they need to justify their wages. We say, well, anyone can do that. Anyone can teach. In fact, we just passed a bill called Alternative Pathway to Licensure that lets anyone bypass the educational training that's necessary for good pedagogy. This is not going to solve any problem. In fact, it's going to add more problems. Because who's training these teachers? They're master's teachers who are already doing more with less. We need educators making policy decisions that make sense for them. We need local control. We need to look at issues of increasing teacher retention, reducing class size, increasing per pupil spending and teacher salaries, and turning around that culture of disrespect for our public school educators.
Mr. Jensen.
Increasing teacher retention is one of 4 points on my plan to improve our education system, because it is truly the number one issue in this district. It has been for a long time and probably will be, so I am dedicated to it. In order to help us retain highly qualified teachers, we need to change the environment that we are having them work in. It is a highly stressful environment. We should know we're the mothers and fathers of those children. We know what it can be like. Here are some specific things that we can do to increase teacher retention and change the environment of these teachers. As I've been talking with teachers and educators in our district, I've come to realize that for the majority of them, they believe that the professional development classes that we make them go through, quite simply, they're a waste of time and resources. In theory, it's a good program. But in reality, it's not benefiting them. It's only increasing stress. Let's get rid of that. Let's decrease class sizes where we can, particularly in the lower grades. Also, we need to quit kidding ourselves with our teacher evaluation systems, where teachers have to go through interviews and peer reviews and submit this form and that form. The reality is parents and teachers and principals already know who the good teachers are.
I'd like to stay on the topic of the teacher shortage for just a moment and ask a follow-up touching on teacher pay. The most recent data from the National Education Association ranks Utah 45th in the nation in teacher pay. And Kanes County School District Superintendent Robert Johnson told KSL in March of this year that they have people living in St. George and teaching in Clark County, Nevada, because they will receive better pay and benefits. How would you suggest increasing teacher pay if you're of that opinion, and if not, what it might be an alternative? This will go to Mr. Jensen first.
Thank you. As I mentioned, I do have a 4-point plan to improving our education system. The first point of that plan is to increase in-classroom funding. Education should not be funded trickle down with students at the bottom receiving whatever we can scrape up at the end. Rather, we need to find ways to put money in the classroom. Specifics again, not talking points. Let's quit funneling so much money into building Taj Mahal school buildings. that truly are fascinating, and for an architect, they look amazing, but I don't think they contribute to the overall educational achievement of the students. We need to move the money into the classroom. We need to make sure that our teachers do have accessibility to supplies that they have. Those are the things that I'm working for so that we can put that money in the classroom. Thank you.
Dr. Kwan.
See, this is the kind of disrespect that I'm talking about here. I've heard this term Taj Mahal, which, by the way, is a mausoleum. Our teachers deserve nice places to live, to work. Sometimes it feels like they're living there. But if you go and look at the beautiful buildings that we're building right here in Taylorsville, nobody says, why are we building these great-looking buildings? Well, teachers and students deserve that too. And when we say local control, which I very much believe in, well, why aren't we saying local control? Right? We have issues with buildings. First of all, buildings, new buildings, they come across by vote, by a bond. This isn't something that the administrators just decide I'm going to spend my money on. Secondly, we have schools, we have old schools, we have schools that don't house enough of the students. So we have space issues, we have efficiency issues. We need to allow our educators to do what they do best.
Thank you. I'd like to move along to issues of government transparency. On September 21st, KUTV reported on continuing complaints from the public about transparency at the Utah Transit Authority. More broadly, voters considered and continue to identify government transparency as a significant concern that motivates their political decision-making. If elected, what measures would you take to support transparency and foster more public trust in government? Dr. Kwan.
You know, when I think of this, I am reminded of the saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. I believe that all government business should occur on the floor, either the House or the Senate floor, where the press and the public are invited. I said that I was running because I felt that that wasn't happening. Public business should not happen behind closed doors. It should not be decided upon by specific caucuses. Bills should be discussed by the merit of their argument, not by who's paying the bill. And we're not going to know that if it's behind closed doors. Now, my opponent has said that publicly stated that he will be part of a supermajority and that will help him get more done. Now, I'm concerned with what that means. First of all, if he's elected, we won't know what that means to get, you know, what will he get done, because, you know, it's likely going to be behind closed doors. Secondly, if it's getting more of the same thing done, I don't want it. We have the lowest per pupil spending. We have the sixth worst air quality in the nation. We're the fourth in the nation for prescription opiate overdose deaths. I want something more. I want improvement. I want change, don't you? If you want change too, this is what it looks like.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen?
I would like to ask you to recall what I stated as my number one priority in my introductory remarks. I said that as a creator and builder, my number one passion is to create a legacy of honest, effective, and transparent government. Remember that I'm a citizen too. I've been subjected to the same thing that you've been subjected to, and I want transparency. I will be effective as a member of the majority party. I've never stated that I'm a member of a supermajority, because I believe that discussion is important among all parties. My opponent does indeed declare that things will go on behind closed doors, and she's repeatedly made that comment that we don't know what's going on. Let me discuss the facts. During the last legislative session, the Republican Party closed their caucus doors exactly twice. If we're going to make a big deal over opening our caucus doors two more times, by the way, that was less than 1.5% of the time, I think we're missing the issue. I want to work on transparency, but what I really want to work on is accountability. Because 98% of the time our government is transparent, and we as citizens have before us the information. but we don't always get the information to see it. We need to work on accountability along with transparency.
Thank you both. Our next issue will be the state economy. A Gallup poll from earlier this year found that Utah residents have the most positive economic outlook of any state in the union. This is unsurprising, given that, according to the Deseret News of March 2nd this year, the state logged a 5.2% growth in sales tax revenue this year, and statewide unemployment is down to 3.5%. However, rural areas around the state have seen economic contraction as high as 6.7% and unemployment up to 8.9%. What steps would you, as part of the state legislature, take to ensure that rural areas aren't left behind when it comes to economic growth, despite the fact that you come from a less rural district? Mr. Jensen.
We know that in Utah, compared to the other states in the nation, that we do have a good economy, that the economy in Utah is working. But unfortunately, it's not working for everybody. At times, it's not working for rural citizens, and it's also not working for minorities. And I see that we need to make an impact there, and I can make that impact. When we look at how we can help our rural citizens and our minorities, I look to the fact that I would like to reduce our burdensome regulation when we talk about licensure and startup businesses that truly does constrain growth in these sectors. If you look at the Department of Professional Licensing, on a quarterly basis, they release the names of people who they have fined for acting without a license. And in our area, it is 9 out of 10 people who are minority groups. We need to relax our regulations so that people, particularly the rural people and the minorities, can thrive in our economy. These are people who have the skills to be proficient and to make an impact and contribute to our society. But for some reason, our government is getting in the way of that and saying, we are going to put more red tape in front of you and make this harder. I am against that. I am for an economy that works for everybody, minorities and rural citizens.
Thank you. Dr. Kwan?
I am also for a strong economy that helps all of our citizens, but our licenses do help our citizens. Can you imagine calling an electrician to come in and work on your home and not know if he or she is licensed? You want somebody who is trained, and you want somebody who you know has the ability to work on your home. It's your home, right? So I think that there are probably just as many minority people of ethnic minority backgrounds who are licensed than those who are not. So I think that is a very bad idea. I think that we could be doing more for our working families. We need more sustainable enterprises, and we need to stop selling our working families or our workers short. We sell this idea that Utah has a highly educated workforce, but we do so at substandard wages. When we're talking about economic growth, are we talking about corporate profits? No, I don't think so. I think what we need to do is build small businesses. And I brought up Facebook already. $300 million in tax incentives. How much could that go for our small businesses? And also, Facebook would have provided about 120 new jobs. How many more would that create for small businesses? My guess is many more than 120. So I'm reminded of Gail Miller's commercial where she says that we invest in people, and I think that's exactly what we need to do. We need to invest in people.
Thank you both. Now, segueing to the current public lands controversy, H.R. 5780, the Utah Public Lands Initiative Act, designates specific federal lands as components of the National Wilderness Preservation System in Utah. It establishes national conservation areas and watershed management areas, adds specified lands to Arches National Park, and establishes the Jurassic National Monument, affecting over 18 million acres of public land in eastern Utah. However, critics argue the bill would downgrade protections for wilderness-quality lands in the region, create new oil and gas drilling zones that are exempted from environmental protections, and hand over large areas of national public lands to private and state control. What is your stance on this piece of controversial legislation? And more broadly, What would guide your decision-making aimed at balancing the preservation and use of our public lands? Dr. Kwan.
We need to keep it safe, we need to keep it local, but Bishop's Plan hands off public land to corporations through these leases. And we want to have access to our public lands. Utahns love to fish, we love to hike, we love to hunt. But as an example, try and do this in the mountains over by Kennecott. You can't. Because it's local doesn't mean that it's preserved. We want to maintain the access as well as the beauty. It needs to be a partnership of state, local residents, and the federal governments to do that. And economically, it makes sense to do this too. Can Utah afford to fight forest fires without federal intervention? We can't. That would be a huge burden on our taxpayers. And educationally, the CITLA money is negligible. The governor and the legislature can stimulate funding for schools without the exploitation of our public lands.
Mr. Jensen.
I believe nobody cares more about our public lands than I do. I grew up in rural Utah. I grew up surrounded by public lands, and it enabled me to hunt, to fish, to recreate, to truly enjoy nature. I am committed to protecting our lands. I do find that the solution for Utah is local control. If we have 67% of our land that is owned by the federal government, the only thing we are allowed to do with that is recreate. That's like having a bank account full of money, but not being able to make a withdrawal on it. There is no benefit. Besides recreating, our lands hold natural resources that enable us and help us to have enjoyable lifestyles. We sit on these chairs and we enjoy these tables because of natural resources found in our lands. I don't want to exploit them at the cost of recreation, but I do want to utilize what we can from these natural resources and provide prudent management of the lands. Can we afford to fight fires if we are given that new responsibility? Absolutely, because we'll also have a new funding source, not only through CITLA, but through leases that come from allowing timber, from allowing timbering and mineral extraction, from hunting and fishing in parks and collecting those new user fees. We can do it because we'll have the new tax base. And I would rather have our base come from that than your pocket and my pocket.
Thank you both. Now, you've both mentioned political partisanship at a couple of instances throughout this evening, so I would like to ask if someone in this room is still undecided, or someone listening, and maybe from the opposite party, why should they vote for you as opposed to the other candidate? Mr. Jensen.
I would first like to thank my opponent for pointing out something on multiple times, not tonight, but other times that we've met together. She's recognized and she has stated that she thinks I'm a Democrat in secret because I do embrace and do appreciate issues that are important. Not just issues that are important to Republicans, but issues that are important to Democrats and to all other parties. And I think she's got that on the head. I am attracted to both parties and things, values that are embraced by both parties. The reason that you should vote for me if you're a member of the opposing party is simply that you know these issues are important to me, and you know that as an engineer, I can find actual solutions that work. Also, you know that as a member of the majority party, and this is nothing against my opponent, but as a member of that party, I will have a louder voice in the House, and I will be able to bring more funding to our side. I will have increased access to leadership and be able to serve you better. My number one priority is to value you as a human being. I don't think in terms of right and left. I think in terms of right and wrong. And that means that I embrace all of you.
Thank you. Dr. Kwan?
Hi. I do believe in bipartisanship. bipartisanship, of course I do. And this is evidenced by my friends and colleagues who support me, like former Taylorsville City Mayor Russ Wall and many of my community members. And I have great mentors. Democrats pass bills every year. They have to do this with partisan support. Let me rephrase that. They have the privilege of doing this with bipartisan support. And research also supports this. An inclusion of diverse voices create better solutions for the common good. And I have spent my career volunteering in community advocacy organizations. Rarely, if ever, do we ask about political parties. We work on creating solutions for specific problems. I will do exactly that when I'm on the Hill. I'm not going to worry about which party I'm in that is going to create a better regard to leadership. I am there to work for you. I'm not there to be a voice for a party.
To follow up on that question, if there were a specific policy position advocated by your opposing party that you believe could be good for Utahns in general, what would that be and how would you support it, Dr. Kwan?
Yeah, actually, this is an issue that came up with the unions. There was an issue that it was between sustainability and coal industry. And I am very much interested in sustainability issues, but I also believe that it cannot come on the backs of our citizens. Have a detrimental impact on our citizens without us making sure that we have mitigated those impacts. And I believe that bill, which my colleagues up at the Hill had voted against it, I would have voted, I'm sorry, they voted for it and I would have voted against it for that reason. It did not include measures for the workers in that industry.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen.
One of the issues that I would support that is primarily pushed from the Democratic side is air quality. That is something that I truly am committed to. It is something that we can make a difference in through education.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to turn to the audience. If anyone in the audience has a question that they would like to ask one of the candidates, you may please step forward to the mic so that we can have some audience questions.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you both for putting yourself on the line. It has been a lot of talking about the raising the minimum wage in Utah. We have situations, for example, in Oregon, that there is a $15 minimum wage now. Having owned my own business for many years, I can see the effect that such a measure would take on the small businesses. Because it's not just the wage, it's the federal taxes and the employment taxes and so forth that the owner of the business has to take on. So I think, in my opinion, that is an unsustainable system, especially for small businesses. Big corporations have no problem. Banks, for example, they start their tellers at $12.50 an hour, so that is not an easy for them. My question to both of you is the following. Why do you think that $15 an hour is a sustainable system? And for you, Mr. Jensen, would be what can you do in your position to really alleviate the fact that $7 an hour is not enough to really help a family?
Thank you. And the first response will go to Dr. Kwan.
So are those weren't two different questions for us, right? They're one question for both of us to answer, because I think in there was an assumption that I would support a $15 minimum wage increase. Was that your
yes.
Question? Okay. So I actually don't think a $15 minimum wage increase in Utah would be sustainable, although there's research that shows that in order for a family to live in a two-bedroom apartment here in Utah, in Salt Lake City, you would need $15.50. I don't think that's sustainable here. I think we need to look at incremental increases. But you remember back in the 80s? Do you remember? I'm sorry. So you remember back in the 80s?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that.
We had the trickle-down system, right? So the understanding there was the money would be up on top and then it would trickle down to the workers. Well, why is it unheard of to give money, increase the wages in our to our workers and trickle up, right? Because what we do know that when people have money and that they will spend it. So we do know that. We also know that the impact to small businesses is not going to be as great as the fear is, right? So I'm not saying that there's no impact. There certainly is going to be an impact. And so that is an issue. But I'm very interested in making sure that our working families who have not essentially had a raise since the 80s have a living wage.
Mr. Jensen.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not answer the actual question. The actual question was $15, and did I say not $15? But I certainly do support a minimum wage increase. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Dr. Kwan. Mr. Jensen.
I will point out the elephant in the room. I was born in the 80s, so I don't have a great recollection of them, but I do have a little bit. You're exactly right. That $7.50 is not sustainable to raise a family on. There are things that we can do to create sustainable livings for people. I don't necessarily think that raising the minimum wage is the way to do that, though I think the way to do that is provide tools for people so that they're not competing for minimum wage jobs, but instead allow them to go create jobs. I talked earlier about the fact that we need to relax our licensure regulations and our startup business regulations that truly strangle people and don't allow them to do this. I'll tell you what, if I had the opportunity to go compete for a minimum wage or go start my own business and it could be a reality, I would go follow my dreams. And I would bet that most of you have a dream unfulfilled, something that you want to do. And when our government gets in the way, puts red tape in front of you, and makes it hard to jump through those hoops, we squash that. And so too often we go back to competing for minimum wage jobs. But let me make this second point. Free market principles work. Yes, we have a federal minimum wage, but right here in our district and surrounding areas, you can go to places like McDonald's and other retail stores and get more than a minimum wage. Free market works.
Thank you. We have time for another audience question.
I wrote mine out because I wanted to make sure I made the point. I'm a lifelong educator, and I have a great concern that the severe teacher shortage in Utah, such that districts are resorting to hiring people with content knowledge but no training in the skills required to successfully develop a scope and sequence of instruction, a classroom management system, and valid methods of evaluating student performance. I also see a direct connection between the shortage and the draconian changes that were made to the retirement system a number of years ago, where in the first year, you couldn't even go back in and substitute, and the unintended consequence of that was they couldn't find substitutes. Even with the changes that have now been made that allow substitutes, they have set a limit on earnings that is punitive to both the school system and the retired teachers who would like to work there. I also see a direct connection between the funding shortage for public schools and the increase in funding for charters. Some of the legislators who have driven this funding are developers who personally profit from building these schools. This represents a conflict of interest, in my opinion. Many of the charters are operated for profit. Research has shown that they are not superior to public schools.
Ma'am, would you like them to address funding in education? Or
I'd like them to address both the retirement system and what you would do about that, because now schools are driven to hiring people in specialty areas like my own from private agencies that charge much more per hour for the services of specialists. And then On the charter school issue, many of the charters are operated for profit. Okay, I said that already, but these schools are not superior to public schools, but in many cases are inferior. It is as though the legislature would like to starve the public schools into oblivion in favor of charters and private schools. What would you do to address these two issues of the retirement system and the funding of charters, which directly compete with the funding of public schools?
Thank you. We'll start with Mr. Jensen in a minute for this question.
Thank you. As I stated before, that if we have stressful environments for our teachers, and that includes retirement benefits, then how can we expect to attract professionals? Because we need professionals in our education system. I don't want to send my children to somebody who is not qualified to be their teacher and to instruct. I want the best for my child, and I'm sure that you want the best for your child as well. My approach is we need to get the legislature out of making decisions for our school system. I fully support local school boards, state school boards, parents and teachers to make the decisions. Currently, there are about 130 files that have already been opened by our legislators to try and solve problems in our education system. 130. They're piecemealing the solution because it's not their area of expertise. We need to turn it to local.
Thank you. Dr. Kwan.
I do agree that we need to take it to local. As I said before, with trying to get our schools to not build Taj Mahals, that's a local school issue. So I do agree that it has to be local. I absolutely agree that we need professional licenses. When you get rid of our APL, when you have APL, and then it disrespects our profession, like it doesn't matter. Anybody can teach. That's absolutely untrue. These are some of the reasons why our teachers are leaving. And then when you have a retirement system that only encourages someone to work for about 8 years before they lose it if they move districts, that doesn't help our retention either. So we are losing teachers. We're losing them out of state. We're losing them to other professions, and that needs to stop. In what we're talking about, charter schools, they get public monies, but they are not looked at and evaluated and assessed at the same way that public schools are, and they need to be.
Thank you both. We will now move to our closing remarks, and we will start with Dr. Kwan.
Oh, I gotta get to my notes. Thank you very much. I want to thank Jack and Carol for those two questions. I didn't get a chance to thank you before, and I really appreciate you coming tonight, and I appreciate everybody for coming tonight to this. I spent my career in community advocacy. I have a lifetime of experience working with people, my education, my background, my profession. I am very interested and committed to working on improving our educational system, improving our air quality, improving our criminal justice system, improving for the citizens of District 34. First and foremost, I plan and I will be accessible and accountable. Communication is key. Most Utahns don't know who their representative. I want to change that. You know who I am. I will always be available for that. I'm not going to be doing what's just good for my party. I'm not going to be doing something that's just good for a philosophical thought that I brought in with me. I'm going to be doing what's good for the citizens of 34. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen.
I'd first like to thank my opponent for being here tonight. I feel like this has been a wonderful opportunity to discuss policy and talk about the things that are important to each of us, to each of you. Carol, I want to address the second part of your question now. I ran out of time, so I apologize about that. I do recognize and value the power behind having multiple options and systems and programs. And in education, we do have private schools, we have homeschooling, and we have public schools. And we all know that children aren't the same. And so by providing options, we allow ourselves to better meet the needs of each individual child. But Carol, I will agree with you, and I will agree with my opponent, that when we're talking about charter schools, we're talking about systems that do receive public education but are not held to the same standards and scrutiny. So when I talk about choice in education, I'm really thinking, considering the systems of public, private, and public, because I think that'll is the best for our children. I would like to let you know as I wrap up this that I feel that I can best represent you. I will dedicate myself to be your representative. My opponent has publicly stated, in an effort to make herself more available and more effective, that she will condense her working schedule as a professor at Salt Lake Community College and teach online so that she has more availability. Well, I'll tell you that I am not here to divide my attention between my job and your legislator. For those 45 days, I will not work part-time for my employer. I will work full-time for you. I have already arranged with my employer so that I can just close my office door and be your representative, because that's what you need. As an engineer, I am trained to think analytically, to get down to the facts, not to pass votes based on what feels good and then later regret the unintended consequences. I have been trained to consider up front the different points of view and find solutions that work, to deliver results, to consider feasibility, sustainability, economics, and acceptability. I will be your representative, and I hope that you can find that I am here to represent you. Thank you.
Thank you both. That concludes tonight's debate. Please join me once again in thanking both Mr. Jensen, Dr. Kwan, vying to represent District 34 in the Utah State House, and also Rachel Sanders and the ABU Education Fund for organizing this event. It is our shared belief that open public dialogue and debate is the cornerstone of a healthy democracy. In an era when voter participation is often at all-time lows, it is essential that each of us remembers the importance of active participation in our local, statewide, and national governments. We hope that you will begin that engagement with us tonight by sticking around to participate in a meet and greet with these two candidates. And of greatest importance, be sure to vote. To aid you in this effort, voter registration materials are also available as you exit the auditorium. It's easy, it's painless, it's the most important thing you can do as a member of your community. Thank you and good night.